From the Moen Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. It is a great time to listen to podcasts. We talk with industry expert Nick Hua, who even has a new podcast about podcasts. Then Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris host the podcast Still Processing, where they discuss our relationship with culture at a time when people aren't exactly hanging out together.
I've been thinking a lot about, like, what do I really like about people in the last couple of weeks? What I do miss is the energy of being in spaces with people, regardless of whether or not they're getting on my last nerve.
That's today on The Frame. We'll be right back.
Imagine if you could charge your electric vehicle at the places you already love to eat, shop, and play. Whether you're at the movies, on your weekly grocery trip, or running errands at your local mall, Volta EV charging stations are built around your day-to-day and located in your community and nationwide. All you have to do is check in, plug in, and go about your day. It's EV charging made convenient. Download the Volta app to find your new favorite place to charge.
With all of us staying at home these days, the need for entertainment suggestions is growing. If you go on social media, there are countless recommendations for things to watch and listen to, including podcasts. And for the many people who might not get out of their homes, it's a strangely good time to find good podcasts. Joining me now to talk about podcasts and the podcast industry is Nick Hua. He runs Hot Pod. It's a trade publication for the podcast industry. He also writes about podcasts for Vulture. Nick, welcome back to the show.
How's it going, John?
It's going okay. So I'm curious, from your perspective, how has the pandemic and self-distancing impacted the podcast industry?
On one hand, folks sort of moving more towards like being homebound and not commuting and staying indoors has had some downward impact on overall podcast listening, but it's sort of not particularly evenly distributed. News podcasts are, my understanding, have gone up, whether it's coronavirus-specific news podcasts or like daily news podcasts, but a lot of other genres are seeing slight dips, with some exceptions. I've heard stories about true crime podcasts falling off a little bit. I'm hearing stories about sports podcasts falling off a little bit, because there's not a lot of sports happening right now. And I think the general thinking is that we don't quite know how the longer term trends are going to look like until Americans are more settled into their sort of like confined at home lives. So that's from a listening perspective. And, you know, basically everybody's like bracing themselves for a hit on the money side. Advertisers are beginning to be a little bit more sort of tighter with their belts because they don't quite know what the scope of the economic crisis that we're about to walk into. And so there's a lot of, you know, pulling back and assessing right now. There's just this possible gap moving forward between the advertising money and sort of media engagement right now. And that's the tricky thing to watch.
Where was growth headed in the podcast industry before the crisis emerged? Could it, and even if we're early, accelerate the growth of listeners, even if the ad dollars right now aren't following?
The theory is that podcasting will see an increase as people kind of turn to it to fill up their sort of entertainment gaps. And prior to this moment, the general thinking was that podcasting would continue its onward climb. The industry would be maturing at this point of bringing more advertisers, bringing in more talent, you know, creating more shows at a higher level, a higher audience base. But of course, you know, we're moving into a period of intense uncertainty for an unknown period of time. And so, you know, things could look really, really weird, even if it doesn't look comprehensively bad.
If you go on iTunes, some of the trending podcasts right now are things like NPR's Coronavirus Daily, CNN's Coronavirus Fact versus Fiction. You get the drift. There are a lot of coronavirus podcasts right now. Have you checked any of them out?
Yeah, by and large, it's a lot of established news brands creating very specific service journalism products to help people like just get better information and to keep more on top of, you know, the incremental developments of how things are looking like both here in the United States and globally on the day-to-day. However, there's also a darker side to this trend. There have been some instances of really questionable coronavirus-related podcasts, you know, not particularly savory characters providing information that isn't sound or is poorly sourced. And so there is this possibility for some, you know, scams and unreliable information out there. It's a confusing time, and so there's always chaos when it comes to something like this, and just got to be super careful about how you're getting your information.
We're talking with Nick Kwa. He runs Hot Pod. It's a trade publication for the podcast industry. So let's talk about the people who may not want to spend all of their waking hours listening to a podcast about the pandemic. What kind of new escapist fare might you recommend? And are you seeing some growth in certain genres within podcasts?
For what I've heard, you know, comedy podcasts are, you know, holding strong there. But if you're looking for something a little bit more escapist and uplifting a little bit, I got a couple of recommendations. I cannot recommend more highly a recent Reply All episode called Case of the Missing Head. Essentially, it's a very low stakes caper in which PJ Vogt, who's a co-host of Reply All, hears about this song that may or may not exist and kind of goes down a rabbit hole and tries to figure out if it exists or not.
And every time I searched something new and found another dead end, I was getting increasingly frustrated, but also kind of scared. Like, it started to dawn on me that there was something really bizarre happening.
It has this sort of like lightness that I kind of like really need right now. The other thing that I would sort of add to that is that I would recommend Phoebe Reads a Mystery. If you listen to Criminal, which is a true crime-ish podcast by Readertopia, the host Phoebe Judge has a new site project where she just reads a mystery novel out loud.
One thing that's been making me feel a little more at ease has been reading fiction. I started reading Agatha Christie's first published novel, The Mysterious Affair at Styles, and I thought, maybe I could read it to you. A chapter a day, until we get to the end. No ads, just a good mystery.
I put it on a background, it's great background stuff, and it's just a fun thing to have around to kind of moderate my emotions right now.
I'm going to recommend one myself. The podcast is called Dead Eyes. It's by the comedian and actor Connor Ratliff, and he was cut out of Band of Brothers 20 years ago. Tom Hanks was the director of that series, and Tom Hanks fired him for having dead eyes as an actor. It's an existential quest about one actor's relationship to himself and to his acting career. I would highly recommend it. Let's talk about your upcoming project with our own Elias Studios. It's a podcast about podcasts, and it's launching this spring.
The fundamental thinking behind the show is it will be your guide to the podcast world, particularly if you're new to it, if you're a casual listener. The thing about this place is that it's infinitely more complex and dense than you think it is, and there's always more stuff and more people than you've heard. And the show hopefully would be sort of a travel guide through this universe.
Nick Kwa runs Hot Pod. It's a trade publication for the podcast industry. He's also developing a podcast about podcasts for Elias Studios, which is launching this spring. Nick, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up next on The Frame, the hosts of the podcast Still Processing, who are still processing how culture has been reshaped by the pandemic.
Support comes from Japan House LA presenting Yes, Kawaii is Art. Express yourself. Kawaii translates to cute or adorable, yet its influence extends beyond aesthetics to encompass fashion, art, technology, and even social behavior. Sebastian Masuda, the king of kawaii, brings together multiple artworks unraveling the kawaii concepts to foster a sense of joy, innocence, and community as a tool for self-expression and representation. Visitors can step into this colorful world to feel the aesthetic for themselves. May 2nd to November 3rd. No admissions fee. More at japanhousela.com.
We're talking today about podcasts in the age of a pandemic. One show that is returning today after a break is called Still Processing. It's a podcast with one of the smartest takes on culture and a favorite of ours here at The Frame. Still Processing is hosted by Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham. They're both staff writers at The New York Times. When we reached them by Skype this week, each in their respective homes, I asked them how the current crisis is affecting their approach for the new season of Still Processing.
I don't know. We're still figuring that out a little bit, but it occurred to me today, Jenna, as we were trying to figure out how to explain what our goal was this season. I mean, I think you knew, and I just had to catch up with where you were. But I think we really are going to spend this bunch of episodes that we're going to release over the next couple of months just watching listening to and reading lots of things and just enjoying that they got made. Mm-hmm. We'll do the things that we would typically do with a work of culture. But I mean, we're really just going to look at all this great art and popular culture that we have and talk about it.
Well, we always see this show as, you know, a balm in some ways. We always want it to feel like, you know, virtual happy hour with us. But I think now we're really leaning into that. And so we want people to feel held. We want people to feel seen. We don't want to add to their anxiety. And we also don't want to diminish it. And so I think we feel like our offering is, you know, helping people make the most of this extra time they have and hopefully distract them from some of the bigger pressing things for an hour or so a week.
So I'm going to come back to that idea of balm and about some of the pieces of art and culture that you're really feeling like you want to consume these days. How would you categorize that content? Does it fall into certain niches?
What do you think, Wes?
I mean, I don't know. We haven't really mapped out what exactly we're going to do. We've been going a lot by gut instinct and like feeling our way toward things that would be fun to think about and watch together and listen to together and read together. We're going to do a bunch of different things.
Wesley, you recently wrote in the Times about rewatching the Steven Soderbergh movie Contagion from 2011. And the headline was, for me, rewatching Contagion was fun until it wasn't. And I have to say, I just rewatched it too, and it was really spot on about how diseases spread. There's so many close-ups of how often people touch things, and then the bodies really start piling up. So what role does Contagion, or Wesley, a pandemic novel that I think both of us love, Emily St. John Mantel's Station 11, play in our lives?
I mean, it depends on what you need from these works of plague and their aftermaths. I watched Contagion because I heard one of the people who worked on it, one of the science journalists who consulted on it on a show called On the Media, talking about all of the problems with virus movies and like the ways in which what the movies have to say about such things aren't always accurate. But, you know, the fact that she was a consultant on that movie made me wonder, like, how she mentioned how hard she worked and how she and the other people who worked on the film as consultants, how hard they worked to get it right. So I'm like, okay. And Soderbergh is one of my top 20 favorite filmmakers. But I was really surprised by how there's a point in the movie where just for me, it shifted into going from a movie that's sort of winking at you and having a good time with you as a work of genre, science fiction, sort of medical science fiction genre, filmmaking, into something really much more grave and considered about what happens to us in times of uncertainty where we're at war with a thing we can't see, and what that does to society and what it does to relationships. But really the thing that I love about the movie is that it's not really, really about that. It's actually just about keeping your government functioning. And the idea that you have these three different women representing these three different, they're not three different, because Kate Winslet and Jennifer Ely both work for the CDC, but they do different things within the CDC. And then Marion Cotillard works for the WHO. But the idea that like you have these three women like saving the world, essentially, not because it's some great thing, you know, to make themselves look good, but because it's their jobs.
Right, exactly.
These receptors are found in the cells of both the respiratory tract and the central nervous system. And the virus attaches to the cell like a key slipping into a lock. Somewhere in the world, the wrong pig met up with the wrong bat.
You ever seen anything like this before?
No. And it's still changing. It's figuring us out faster than we're figuring it out.
It doesn't have anything else to do.
I don't know. It just really moved me, that movie's belief in work and in science as a real sort of moral cause.
Jenna, what about you and the role that plague stories might play in our current lives?
You know, I'm more anxious prone. I'm more prone to anxiety than the average person might be. So I made the mistake of watching 28 Days Later with some friends right at the beginning of all this because I thought it would be funny, and it was not funny at all.
It's not funny, but it's great.
Who were chasing you?
My mom. My dad. They're trying to kill me. There's others, too.
How many?
Loads, Sam.
I wasn't helpful at all. Every time I go into a grocery store, I just think about that scene when they're in the grocery store. And it's like the one moment, it's like the reprieve of calm, and then everything goes to shit. So I don't know. But, you know, I'm a big reader, and I've been reading Severance by Ling Ma, which I had not read before. And it's similar. It starts in New York City, and it's about a fever that envelops and encompasses the whole city, and about the few survivors that are left after and kind of how they pick up the pieces. But the thing that's interesting about the fever is that it actually makes people really nostalgic. And so they get really caught in their own memories, and that's what causes them to become unwell. Like, they can't think for themselves anymore. They're just trapped in the past. And so it's just a really interesting metaphor for, I don't know what yet, because I'm only like a third of the way in, but the story that's unfolding is really beautiful, and I'm actually enjoying that. So it's not, I don't know. It is a pandemic book, but it feels like it's about something much richer and relevant right now that has to do with change and accepting newness and not being, or it's about being a little bit more aware of the habits that don't serve us. And that feels very appropriate for right now. So it's that's actually comforting.
Yeah. We're talking with Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham from the New York Times. They're the hosts of the podcast Still Processing. I want to ask you about culture. You both write about culture and you cover it on your podcast, but we're in this bizarre place now where shared culture is gone. Movie theaters, plays, live music, stand-up comedy. So how do you figure out what shared culture means and how you can talk about something that can't be shared anymore? I mean, obviously you can watch stuff on Netflix or something like that, but how much of your own identity and your own awareness of what's going on in the world is informed by being with other people as you're experiencing something culturally?
You start.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, what do I really like about people in the last couple of weeks? Like, what do I really like about humanity and people? And I was about to say, like, I love being in the museum and, like, watching, looking at paintings with other people around me. But I don't like that. I don't like it. I need people out of my way. I don't want you walking in front of me while I'm trying to like figure out what this piece is about. I don't want to overhear you be a docent when you really don't know what you're talking about. I don't miss that. But what I do miss is the energy of being in spaces with people, regardless of whether or not they're getting on my last nerve. I don't love people, but I love humanity. And there is something really comforting about collective experience and having it immediately. You're not even verifying it. You are a part of the collective experience, so you know it's happening. Even when you aren't on board with, you know, I mean, it's rare at a concert to not like something it's rare for me as a non-professional concert goer to be at a concert and not really enjoy myself. But to be at a movie that isn't working and in an audience that is really with it, I don't care. Like, I'm with the experience that these people are having, even though I am on the other side of that feeling. And one of the things that Jenna and I are thinking about in terms of the way we're thinking about, like, how we're going to make these episodes coming up, is how to not replicate that experience, because that's impossible, but how Jenna and I can be a conduit between the art and the many, many people who are experiencing it separately, how to bring us all together just through the two of us having a conversation about some of it.
Mm-hmm. Jenna, what would you add to that, especially in terms of how technology might be part of the solution?
There is something about this moment that really is pushing you to go deeper and be more vulnerable and be more open, because if you're not, then all you're really doing is recycling worry and anxiety and fear. And so it's interesting to think about the role that technology does play in that. And of course, there's so much of modern life is being shifted to digital spaces, but there's also so much of that happening. It's easy to get overwhelmed by that too. And I think there's a little bit of, I had a term for it. Instead of FOMO, it's like fear of not making the most of this time. And I worry that that's coming up too, that people feel as though, you know, we have all this extra time and there are all these yoga classes online and there are all these virtual raves and dance parties. Like I should be doing all these things. But I think it's also okay to remember that we're experiencing a level of trauma on a global scale that is really unprecedented. And it's also very okay to just be with that too. You don't have to do anything, even though technology is making it extraordinarily possible to do more things from our computers than we even thought possible.
Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris are culture writers at the New York Times. They're the hosts of the podcast Still Processing. They'll be back after this short break. You're listening to The Frame. Stay with us.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. I'm talking with the hosts of the podcast Still Processing, New York Times writers Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris. They have a new episode out today titled A Pod for Both Our Houses, A New Season for a New Time.
I think the amazing thing about this virus is, I mean, if you are one of the lucky people who hasn't been directly touched by having it, or like having a family member or a loved one touched by it, or you know, someone who like infected by it in the case of the sick, it is not like other disasters, right? There is a degree to which we are having an experience that you can't quite have in a hurricane, earthquake, you know, nuclear incident, if not that we necessarily have a great deal of recent experience with how awful that can be. But our sort of physical infrastructure is still intact, and the threat we're basically the threat to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's something really just moving about the connections that we all are able to make to each other, because what is upon us is in some ways preventable, and we're still undergoing the sort of psychological experience of going through a trauma, and being able to talk to and communicate with and physically see by virtue of this technology is really, really, I don't know. It's a kind of natural disaster experience that we've never had before. And I think I'm really curious to see who we are on the other side of it, given how connected it is keeping us to each other.
Well, let me ask this last question, which is a follow-up to that. I think when we come out of that, there's probably a very slim chance that the Walt Disney Company is going to say, you know what, let's stop the Avengers and Marvel movies and Star Wars, and let's make movies about real people and stories that matter. That ain't going to happen. But if this is a moment for a reset, a cultural and artistic reset, where institutions, both large and small, artists who are working alone or in front of 50,000 people can say, I'm changing my priorities, what do you hope that might be? What are the sorts of things that you would like to see reset after all of this passes?
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I think you stole my answer, John. I mean, I do think, because I wonder, this is not really about the way the movies work right now, right? Like, I'm not going to be another person who laments who decries this sort of prominence and proliferation of what we call superhero movies. But I do want to, I would love it if what happens at the other side of this is more low stakes movies about human beings, And I'm very here for the people listening who want to argue that that's what the Avengers is about. Like, I hear that. I hear you. I hear you. But I also would like to see what, you know, Steve Rogers is doing on his downtime. And, you know, I think that there is a type of movie that we make fewer and fewer of. And now we make virtually not at all. And I wonder if it's really going to come down to what the audience is for it. But I think that whether that migrates back from streaming into movie theaters is going to be an interesting question. And I wonder how much we are going to hunger for, like, and really, really hunger for live culture. I mean, are we going to flood restaurants immediately? Are we going to go run back to museums? Are we going to buy every book on the store of our recently opened bookshelves? I don't know, but I definitely know that I'm going to be excited to get back into the world and reconnect with strangers around art. Jenna, what about you?
I love that answer. I mean, babe, also, yeah, people are going to be like twerking their asses off this summer. Like, are you kidding me? Like, Reese Beach is going to be popping. Like, yes, everyone is going to be like free from Corona. Like, I mean, hopefully we will be, but I'm just like, yeah, like New York, especially New York, is going to go off the rails.
I think that'll happen in LA too. I mean, I think everybody is just eager to be on the other side of this whenever that arrives.
Wesley Morris and Jenna Wortham write about culture at the New York Times. They host the podcast Still Processing. Wesley and Jenna, thanks so much for coming on the show. Stay safe, stay healthy, and I can't wait to hear what this season's got in store for us.
Oh, thank you, John.
Thank you for having us.
That's The Frame for today, but a quick note before we go. Your financial support is vital to our ability to provide you with coverage of the coronavirus pandemic. So donate now to KPCC and help us reach our spring member drive goal. If you have the means to support KPCC at a higher level of giving, please consider joining the KPCC Leadership Circle with a donation of $1,500 or more. But however much you can afford, we really appreciate it. So please give at kpcc.org, and thanks. I'm John Horn. Call up somebody you care about. Stay well. We'll be back here tomorrow at the Moan Broadcast Center.